If you travel a lot for work or for vacation, you might be familiar with that feeling you get knowing you're leaving your space unused for long periods of time and you're still paying for that privilege. But hosting on Airbnb means you don't have to leave your home sitting empty when you're away. Being an Airbnb host isn't just a way to earn some extra cash. It's a chance to share your space and make a guest's vacation all the more memorable. You might be thinking, maybe my place isn't the right fit, but don't write it off just yet. Your potential Airbnb might be right in front of you. Whether it's a spare room or even your entire home, there's an opportunity waiting. Airbnb turns your home into a practical and even profitable venture. We just got back from a family trip to Hawaii where we stayed in a great Airbnb, but our place back home could have been a highlight to somebody else's travels, and we could have used the extra cash to help pay for the trip. So if you're curious about hosting on Airbnb, find out how much your space could be worth by visiting airbnb.com/host. Once again, that's airbnb.com/host. Hey, we're going behind the scenes of the savvy seven-figure online business that started as a side hustle. What's up? What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Because look, you're the CEO of your own life, and if you're looking for realistic ways to make extra money, you are in the right place. This is the show for you. Now, the online business world has always been a tumultuous place. Ups and downs, algorithm updates. But it feels like even more so in recent months, starting with Google's helpful content update last fall. Now, today's guest has weathered that storm quite well, going from what started as a part-time project that made $50 in its entire first year to now seeing around 500,000 page views a month, which translated into a seven-figure website-based business last year. From thesavvycouple.com, Kellen Klein, welcome to the Side Hustle Show.
Hey, Nick. Honored to be here. Excited to talk blogging and how to weather the storm and give people as much value as possible.
Well, it's been a long time coming. I know you've been a part of our popular like roundup style episodes, but the whole hot seat is yours and I'm excited to dive into this one. So stick around. We're covering what you can do to make sure your content is seen as helpful as possible, how to diversify your traffic sources, maybe reduce your reliance on Google since that's become even more unpredictable of late. And the multiple income streams that all add up to a super profitable online business. So maybe we start here. That's on top of everybody's mind. Hey, helpful content update. HCU has decimated a lot of online businesses, even really well-established sites that I would have considered pretty authoritative. From your perspective, how do you make sure everybody thinks their content is helpful? At least that's what I do when I set out to try and write a new post. But like, how do you make sure Google's on the same page here?
Yeah, I first want to start by saying I think right now we're in a time with Google that I think Google is broken, especially after the March update we just had. Google's trying to figure out how to stay up with AI and how to not diminish their business and how much it costs to crawl websites and everything. So I think we're in this tuberculous time where there's a lot of waves going around and trying to figure out how to stay ahead of this helpful content update. But for us, I think the biggest tips that I can give is number one, you have to build a brand. Something that me and you have done a really good job of, where people are actually going out and searching our brand and they're going into Google and they're giving that signal that people are searching for our brand. So I think a lot of the times, 80-20 rule, I think 80% of the sites that have built a really good brand and they are publishing good, high quality content all the time, I think they are definitely riding the wave and they're staying above these updates. And the companies that are more niche sites and they're not really building an entire brand with social media and with an email list and with a YouTube channel, I think that those are the ones that really got hit, specifically ones that were just publishing a ton of AI content and not having any expertise or different sharing their experience or authority or trust within their articles and making them better than the next one. I think that's super important to really understand the user's intent when they're going to search these terms and solving it the best way possible.
That's one of the things when it comes to AI. It's like, well, it's just regurgitating what else is already out there. It's like somebody at some point has to come up with some primary source material to
exactly
fuel these stories that everybody else is ultimately going to crawl. And that was one of my theories that helped Side Hustle Nation survive or not get hit too hard in the helpful content thing was like, you mentioned it, kind of like building a brand, the branded searches. A lot of the search traffic is for, you know, Side Hustle Nation type of stuff or Side Hustle Show. And so I think that definitely helped, but that's kind of tough. Like in your opinion, what elements would go into that? Like having the social media presence, kind of casting a wide net, sure. Having an opinion on certain topics rather than just regurgitating what else is out there. What else goes into building a brand in your eyes?
Yeah, I think it's getting on major publications. Its backlinks are still, I think, a huge signal to Google. It's the easiest, most efficient way for them to crawl an article or a website and dictate whether that's worth ranking or not. But other than that, I think topical authority is also huge. So staying within your niche and staying kind of narrow-minded instead of going out broad and trying to rank for everything so that you do become the expert that people can trust and they keep coming back to. And then I think, again, overall quality of the content is another big one for staying above the helpful content updates. You want to make sure you're doing a full content update on your site, making sure you're eliminating articles that are not bringing good quality content and good value to your readers. And then some specific like user experience tweaks that we've done within articles that have really helped. Number one, we use heat maps. So we can kind of tell where people are clicking and which affiliate offers they're clicking, which interlinks they're clicking. We also use scroll maps. So we can tell how far down people are scrolling on the article to say, okay, right about here is where we lose people. How do we make that copy better so that people are continuing to get value and read the entire thing and stay on the page longer?
Oh, interesting.
That's been really useful for us.
What tool do you like for heat maps and scroll maps?
So heat maps is literally called heatmaps.com, I believe. Let me double check that for you. Yeah, heatmapit.com. And then for page scrolling, we use Crazy Egg. And we don't do it very often. I might do it once a quarter on our top 20 articles, 80-20 rule. I live by that rule. And then another one is basically we found before the helpful content update is that really triggered this event where when someone comes to the site, they don't want to scroll forever and find the answer. They want it immediately. So answer the user's intent as fast as you can. And we found that, you know, we have a quick intro and then a lot of times we'll have like quick picks. Like here's a summary of the article with some of the affiliate links. If it's like a best roundup, best of side hustles or best of make money online jobs, we'll have like a roundup right at the top that's clearly lined out and it has the affiliate links that we're basically promoting and it's like solving the user's problem right off the bat.
Okay, interesting. Whereas before you'd almost play this game of time on site, going back to your scroll map, like hey, I want to get people really scrolling down this page. Maybe that's going to send all sorts of positive engagement signals. It's like, no, just answer the question. And that's really interesting to hear. And it's kind of like Wirecutter, right? Like, what are the best robo vacuums? Well, here's our top pick. Just tell me at the top.
Right. I always put myself in the user's shoe. If I'm looking for best savings account, I'm going to go to Google, type in best high yield savings account. I'm going to find a brand that I know and recognize. So NerdWallet, College Investor. And then I'm going to click on that. And they're going to tell me real quickly how they basically ranked these and used their criteria. And then here's their best result. And I'll click and use it. Like, the trust is there. They're giving me the answer to my question immediately and it's off to the races. So yeah, it's definitely changed.
What's frustrating is this was an example just on Twitter this morning where some guy had built a really authoritative site in the fitness space and lost all his traffic in this last update. You know, best running shoes or something was one of his keywords. And now it's sites like Forbes and GQ. And it's like, what? I mean, they talk about everything. They're not just about fitness, whereas this guy was like niched down to fitness and got hammered. It's like, I don't know. I really feel for people who've done everything by the book and are still getting displaced by Reddit, by these big publications that don't necessarily have the topical authority.
Totally. And like I said, I think Google's broken right now. And I totally agree with you. Those bigger authoritative sites have no reason to be ranking for those things. They don't have the expertise or authority and the trust. And I think those niche sites, when done correctly, and they're actually using the product and they're taking pictures and they're doing videos and they're testing the quality of them, like those are the sites that as a user, I want to see and that when I'm making that purchase decision. So yeah, super sad. I'm with you there. One other thing I wanted to mention on how to kind of build the brand and stay away from the helpful content updates and kind of what's this next generation of blogging. We found that basically making a YouTube video in direct correlation with the same keyword, same topic as our blog post, and then embedding it on our blog post has been a huge win because Google owns both and we're going to be making them more money because they're going to be sending traffic back and forth. If it's on our blog post and they click it and they watch it, we have a ton of time on page because of the video being there. If they're on YouTube and they're coming back to the blog post, again, we're going to get more time on page and vice versa. So I think they go hand in hand. And I think if there's one thing, like one user update that shows I've been there, I've done that, I am helpful content, I think it's a YouTube video. So we're trying to do that as much as possible. Plus, you kind of diversify yourself away from if your blog post loses traffic, you can still have that audience and the traffic and the income coming in from the YouTube videos.
Are these often talking head style videos. These are my top picks, or this is my experience with this product. Like, give an example of one that's done well.
Exactly. So we basically made a roundup for best budgeting apps right before the new year, knowing that the new year, everyone's looking to manage their finances better. Plus Mint was shutting down. So it was a very trendy topic of like, oh my gosh, there's millions of users. Where are they going to go for a budgeting app? So we actually got that video to rank number one and two for about a month. And we were promoting Empower through there, and we made an awesome amount of commissions doing that. And it's still ranking and bringing in great traffic. I think it has like 30,000 views now.
Yeah, that's great.
So we basically took, yeah.
Very, very high intent traffic too.
Exactly. Very high intent. So yeah, talking head kind of value oriented roundups, reviews, and just sharing my experience with quitting my job and stuff like that. So trying to build an audience over there as well.
Yeah. I love the YouTube plus written content. Almost a way to double dip. Number one, some people are going to go straight to YouTube to search. Like, I don't want to bother reading. Just, I want to watch the video on this topic. But, you know, both have a chance to rank in Google. And I've had sometimes the article is ranking, sometimes the video is ranking, sometimes both are ranking. That's like the holy grail, but it's a really fun way to do it. And one that I'm kind of playing around with is like really struggled with prioritizing video production. So looking at these different AI tools, one was like, you could make an AI avatar, Nick, which is like, that's really interesting, but like it didn't quite have the functionality and like didn't look quite the way I wanted. They'd bring in all of this stock footage. It would change scenes like every few seconds, almost like a music video. I was like, dang, this would have taken a human editor a ton of hours to do. And it would have taken me like weeks to do something like that. And it's like, this is really, really cool. So I've got just last night was making this list of like, well, here's some of the articles I want to prioritize adding this video to experiment with this double dip strategy.
Yeah, totally. We're pretty far along with the written content with AI, with Surfer SEO, Jasper, ChatGPT. You can kind of use it for anything within your online blogging business. I think we're just at the beginning stages of the video, which is super intriguing, but also pretty scary that you can dub yourself and like make a YouTube video without having to get on camera. But yeah, it's definitely something to monitor and stay ahead of the game with.
One of them I tested was an AI voiceover. And I was like, I wanted it to be me, would train it on my voice. And so I like recorded this little bit. And then the AI version of me didn't sound quite right. Didn't have like the intonations. It said providers instead of providers. He didn't know how to pronounce certain words. I was like, it's not quite there yet, but that would be fantastic. Just upload a script, you know, talking avatar Nick. It's like, here we go. We're really accelerating the content production game. I mean, there comes a point where it knows what questions I'm going to ask. I don't even have to show up and talk to you. It knows how you're going to answer too. What's the role of AI on the written content side for the savvy couple, the savvy mama these days?
So we specifically use Surfer AI to generate most of our content. We also still are users of Jasper and ChatGPT. We basically get the outline done through Surfer AI. First AI content, it's general draft, general first copy. And then we have at least three different humans basically rewrite and optimize the content until it's on a final review to get published. We're very lenient on using AI. Like, why not use a tool that's going to help you optimize your content and get out more content and high quality content? But we also know that we still need human interaction. We need to add our authority, our trust, our personal brand to that. But it's been an absolute game changer.
Yeah, you almost have to bring an opinion and personal insight into this stuff to separate yourself from the robots. But do you find it ends up saving time still? Like, if I'm going to have to prompt the tool to create the outline and then just go through three rounds of editing, would it have been faster to just like write it the right way first?
So our editor basically gets the first draft done with Surfer AI. It takes her maybe 10 minutes. And then the first writer will basically spend about an hour just kind of going through, removing the fluff, adding our own expertise on stuff that we've kind of mentioned within the Asana task that we have specifically done this on this side hustle, like talk about our experience. And then it'll go back to the editor for kind of optimization and adding affiliates. And then it goes to the final review. But overall, I think we're at like 5 or 6 hours of total freelance time.
Okay. Per article.
Per article, which is still a lot, but I've definitely come to the mindset, especially with these updates, is like quality over quantity.
Yeah. What kind of volume are you publishing on a day? Or do you have a target for that?
Yeah. So the Savvy Couple, we were at 5 articles a week. Now we're at 2 to 3. And then the Savvy Mama, we are at, I believe, 4 to 5. So we're still clicking at a pretty good pace.
Yeah. And then in combination with updating the existing library of content.
Right. Yep. We have our editor. She's basically in charge of doing audits. And yeah, she does a handful each week on both sites.
Do you ever worry about running out of stuff to post about. Like, you've been doing this for what? You started 2016 or something? Like, it's been around for a long time.
Yeah. We've kind of got to the point where the make money niche, the side hustle niche, we've pretty much covered every keyword and topic that we'd want to. We still have a little bit left on the keyword list, but yeah, 350 articles or so. And now we're kind of moving into online business. And then eventually I think I want to dive into the investing, but I'm also kind of nervous to do that because again, I don't want to be too broad where I'm not an expert in the online make money space, which is really where me and Brittany have all of our expertise and experience through freelancing and trying online jobs and side hustles. So I want to lean into that.
Yeah, I think that's what makes it fun and interesting. It's like, well, I'm going to guinea pig, test this stuff, and recently started working with a handful of members from the Side Hustle Nation community to go out and test a bunch of different apps and hopefully provide feedback on that.
More with Kellen in just a moment, including his production cost per article, the minimum search volume and competitiveness criteria they're looking at for each keyword, and how email plays a role in driving traffic and search rankings right after this. When you're hiring, it feels amazing to finally close out a job search and hit the ground running with your new hire. But what if you could get rid of the search part and just get matched with qualified candidates? Well, now you can with our sponsor, Indeed. It's simple. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. The matching and hiring platform is trusted by over 3.5 million businesses worldwide to connect with great talent faster. And 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. For my next hire, I'm using Indeed to tap into a talent pool of 350 million unique monthly visitors. And what else is cool is Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. And how about this? Side Hustle Show listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Side Hustle Show. Just go to Indeed.com/Side Hustle Show right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Side Hustle Show. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. If you travel a lot for work or for vacation, you might be familiar with that feeling you get knowing you're leaving your space unused for long periods of time and you're still paying for that privilege. But hosting on Airbnb means you don't have to leave your home sitting empty when you're away. Being an Airbnb host isn't just a way to earn some extra cash. It's a chance to share your space and make a guest's vacation all the more memorable. You might be thinking, maybe my place isn't the right fit, but don't write it off just yet. Your potential Airbnb might be right in front of you. Whether it's a spare room or even your entire home, there's an opportunity waiting. Airbnb turns your home into a practical and even profitable venture. We just got back from a family trip to Hawaii where we stayed in a great Airbnb, but our place back home could have been a highlight to somebody else's travels, and we could have used the extra cash to help pay for the trip. So if you're curious about hosting on Airbnb, find out how much your space could be worth by visiting airbnb.com/host. Once again, that's airbnb.com/host.
I want to ask if you have a sense for the production cost of the 5 or 6 hours of freelance time, and maybe that includes your time as well for each new article.
I'd say anywhere from $150 to $200 per article, which is kind of where it used to be when we were paying just a freelance writer to write the content start to finish, and then having an editor kind of edit it. So the AI definitely helps us optimize and get the first draft done. There are some articles I was paying $300 to $500 for, the longer ones that were insane. So it's definitely saving us time and money and giving our team a system to follow.
And then talk to me about the ROI math or how you tend to think about that. Like, okay, if we can get this post ranking and we estimate it's going to make X in affiliate revenue and Y in ad revenue. Like, talk to me about that side of it.
I am not the best at kind of forecasting that stuff. I kind of just like take the approach of like, let's throw the biggest, widest net possible for our niche into the water and see how many fish we catch. And I know that we're super cash positive. So if we were to waste $1,000 on 4 articles or so, we have the cash to cover it. I think just through our track record of being able to rank articles that we actually write high quality content for, I know that I'm comfortable that our success rate's probably 80% that we can get them to rank and drive traffic and make that money back either through ads and affiliates.
Yeah, this is the challenging part of like, well, how long is that break-even window? And maybe it is somewhat dependent on the search volume around that keyword. Is there a minimum that you're going after?
Yeah, we don't really touch anything under 500 searches per month on Ahrefs. but that's kind of the main keyword. I know you can rank for other long tail keywords. I kind of like the analogy too of like, I'm at bat swinging as many times as possible. So the more articles that we've published over the years, the more grand slams that we've had that have ranked on page one and driven tons of traffic and affiliate income and ad revenue. So I'm willing to swing at as many articles as I can that make sense, that are in our niche and are going to drive traffic eventually to hit those grand slams.
Yeah, it's the 80-20 to everything, exactly. But especially to which posts are going to be in the top 10 or we're going to drive the lion's share of the traffic. If you have one that hits and one that could stick, it's like, yeah, it could be significant. That's helpful.
And real quick, Ahrefs is Ahrefs.com. Super popular paid keyword research and SEO software. SEMrush is another one that guests have mentioned recently.
Minimum 500 searches per month. Is there a keyword difficulty? I mean, obviously the lower the better, but is anything you're like, I don't want to touch it if it's over a certain amount?
I don't really look at keyword difficult anymore. Our DA is about a 60, but I think it was 2 years ago, someone mentioned to me, like, make sure that when you're doing keyword research, that there's at least one other blog that's similar to yours within the SERPs or within the top 10. Because if it's Forbes and New York Times and all that stuff, there's no way you're going to rank. But if there's at least one other blog that has a similar DA than you, it's a probability that you could possibly rank for that. So I make sure it's got good search volume. The DR is not too hard to rank for it. And then I have at least one other person that's a competitor or someone that I'm looking up to that I could potentially outrank or be in line with.
Okay. So that's helpful. Like, don't just look at the difficulty score, but look at the actual search results page and see who else is up here. And are they similar sites or are they New York Times or they're just like massive publications that I'm not going to touch?
Right. Yep. Okay. Exactly.
How about on the republishing side or the updating content side? Is there a process that you follow for that? Because now you mentioned, hey, we got 300 plus articles on the site. Like, I've likened it to painting the Golden Gate Bridge. By the time you're done updating everything, it's time to start back over at the beginning and do it all over again. It's like, you know, this never ending game.
Since we've been doing it for so long and have so many articles, we've actually kind of changed the ratio. We have more audits done per week than new articles. And I think that's helpful just to keep the quality of the content up as high as it can go. But yeah, our process is pretty simple. Again, we use Surfer AI, so they're getting a free plug in this podcast. And we basically use them to audit our article and tell us what optimizations can we do. And then on top of that, our editor will ask us for user experience upgrades. So maybe this article needs a infographic, maybe it needs an interview with someone else or a YouTube video. What can we do to make this article more helpful for the user? Do we need to change around where affiliates are? Do we need to put a quick hit section at the top to solve the user intent more quickly? So kind of just looking at it from a bird's eye view of like, how can we make this article better? And then to go back, the way we identify those is we use Ahrefs and we kind of just sort by what's losing traffic and losing rankings. And then that kind of gives us our low hanging fruit articles that are on page two or three that we can quickly update and get to page one.
Got it. No, that's helpful to know. And that's a similar process over here. Typically better ROI, getting something from bottom of page one, moved up to the middle or page two onto page one, rather than taking a swing at something brand new that may not make it. So we're talking SEO, and I know that's only one part of the game. What else is driving traffic for you guys these days?
Yeah. So for the savvy couple, we don't really do any social media anymore. I still am on Instagram to try to connect with our audience, but we originally were going to go heavy social media influencer route. And then SEO started to take off. So we doubled down on that and kind of lost that connection with the audience going so heavy into SEO. Other than SEO traffic, we definitely use our email lists to drive traffic to new articles and kind of send Google a good signal of, hey, this article was just published and now just got 1,000 page views by the email list coming from a direct line. So that's a really good signal and a really good tip that we've used to help newer articles rank.
Do you send out every new article you post or kind of like a weekly digest?
Usually I just pick one or two. So we send emails Tuesday and Thursday. Usually both days I'll have at least one new article that I want to help send some traffic and ranking signals to drive traffic. And our email list for the savvy couple, I would say is not ideal. It's good for driving traffic, but we've tried to do in course sales and affiliate launches and stuff, and it never really converts well. So I've really kind of come to the conclusion that it's just for driving traffic and building that relationship. We still get affiliate sales through it. And then other than that, we really have the YouTube strategy with the savvy couple, which drives traffic back and forth and we can double dip. But for the savvy mama, which is our second brand that we kind of split our businesses into last year, I knew I wanted to diversify away from just being in Google so that, hey, if Google said the savvy couple, you're losing half your traffic, we are going to pick it up by diversifying with the savvy mama, which really does really well on Pinterest. And it also does well on Google. And then we have a pretty big list with that brand as well. So we're kind of hitting it from all angles with the savvy mama.
How are people getting onto the email list for both sites?
The savvy couple, we have a pop-up. It's basically a exit intent pop-up to find the perfect side hustle. We also have a financial freedom guide that pops up. We only have exit intent pop-ups on the savvy couple. We did originally, I turned it off this week, actually. We had one that popped up after 60 seconds. I might extend that and turn it back on to 90 seconds. I just don't want that to hurt user experience. But we found that to work really well. And then same thing with the Savvy Mama. We use a pop-up with ConvertBox to basically, it's a generic opt-in for moms to organize their time and money.
All right. Now, I appreciate you dropping all these tools on us too, because that's always going to be the next question. Like, oh, we'll link up these different tools for in the show notes. I remember a time when the Savvy Couple was like dominating on Pinterest. Is Pinterest still a thing?
When we originally started the Savvy Couple, we were all about roundups and it was more of like a lifestyle blog. And then when we started to rank for make money online, side hustles, we really went down that route. So originally, yeah, we were probably with roundup articles, with meal plan, meal prep, frugal living type of articles. We were getting, I think, close to 300,000 page views per month from Pinterest back in 2016, 2017.
Yeah. The golden days of whatever, like group boards and stuff.
Yeah. So now we've heard, and I haven't really done much strategy with the Savvy Mama yet, but with Pinterest, we've heard it's making a comeback and they're actually sending traffic to bloggers now again and creators. So we're definitely going to push into that. We actually acquired a blog and merged it into the Savvy Mama, which came with 100,000 follower Pinterest account.
Oh, okay.
So we basically converted that. And then it also came with an email list. So we're kind of leveraging that acquisition and trying to merge it and make it all kind of go together and work well together.
Interesting. Did that site have a big library of content already?
Yeah, it had 800 articles. So we had quite the job. We actually acquired it at the beginning of January. So my team had quite the job of kind of going through the articles. I think we ended up moving around 150 and then we redirected maybe 250 for SEO juice and backlinks and whatnot.
Interesting strategy. It was in a similar space. So it was kind of a natural
similar
fit.
Space, yep. It was a similar space. And it was a friend of ours that just wanted to get rid of it. She was starting a different business and we scooped it up really cheap and it's panned out very, very well. It helped us get into Mediavine within like a month. And this was back when it was 50,000. Now it's down to 10,000 sessions, but it's been an incredible investment.
All right. Growth by acquisition. Now my gears turning a little bit. I hadn't really considered that seriously. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So a little bit of Pinterest, mainly through acquisition and more on the Savvy Mama side, it sounds like today, the email list, the exit through exit intent pop-ups with ConvertBox, side hustle guide, financial freedom guide, like that type of opt-in offer. Anything on, like, I guess, Facebook or paid traffic?
Not for traffic, but we do use Facebook ads very heavily for the Savvy Mama for basically promoting our Chaos to Control bundle, which is just a bundle of digital products and planners for moms to organize their life. And then that basically leads them into our paid membership that we started 2 Octobers ago.
So the Chaos to Control bundle, is this a freebie opt-in or this is a paid product?
That's a paid product. We're still trying to figure out the core opt-in for that site and what that looks like. So we've actually been sending traffic directly through paid traffic on Facebook, directly to our $27 low ticket bundle. And then there's upsells and downsells to get into our membership.
Got it. And trying to break even or make some money on the Facebook ad. Like, this is kind of, I've never really attempted to do it myself, but like, you know, driving traffic to this low ticket offer, if we make a little bit of money, great. If we lose a little money, I'm confident we'll make it up on the back end because we got an email subscriber and all that stuff.
Yeah. So I believe I heard through the grapevine that you're in 2X right now.
Yes.
Okay. So through their value chain dashboard, we basically set it up with our coach, Brian. I don't know if he's your coach.
Yeah. Brian's awesome.
Yeah. So we set up the value dashboard that basically said we get our subscriber LTV. So we know exactly how long people are staying in the membership, how much our average order value. So we have the whole dashboard that tells us, all right, this is our break-even point. If we can get leads for less than this amount, we're making money because there's a certain amount of percentage that's going into the membership. There's a certain percentage that's getting the annual membership. Here's the churn rate. It basically does the entire value chain for us. So I know exactly how much we can spend on ads.
Very cool.
So for the sake of context, 2X is a business coaching program designed to help quote-unquote six-figure hustlers transition into seven-figure CEOs. Kellen is one of several friends and colleagues who've been through it and have seen great results. So I decided to give it a shot as well. If you're in that six-figure hustler stage, you can check out some of their material at 2x.co. Tell them I sent you and they'll take good care of you.
What's a qualified lead cost you these days from Facebook?
So to sell our bundle, right around Christmas time, we were at like $25 per sale. Our bundle's $27, and then we have a bump. So our average order value is like $35, and then people into the membership. So we were making incredible money the first of the year into December, into the first of the year. But now we're kind of breaking even on the selling of the initial product and kind of just growing the membership through selling the initial product, which isn't the best. We're trying to find a freebie that we can give, then do like a one-time offer thank you page and then upsell, downsell. So we're trying to figure out the funnel there. But yeah, for a qualified sale for our product, it's right around like $30.
Okay, got it. So talk to me about this membership. So this is targeting busy moms who want to go from chaos to control. What's behind the paywall? What's the price point on this?
Over the last year, we learned a lot. We basically got the idea from Liz Wilcox.
Oh yeah, she was just on the show. Yeah, episode 600 was with Liz, yeah.
Survivor Liz Wilcox.
That's right.
It's amazing. We love that show. So we got the idea of like, what would look like a low-cost membership for moms? And we're talking $9 a month. So we started the membership and it was basically just a button that said, do you want more printables for $9 a month? And people were like clicking it. We're like, all right, people are interested in that. So basically what the membership is, and we kind of played with the price last year. We went all the way up to $27 a month and we had a bunch of people joining, but way less than the $9. We brought it back down to $9, which is good for us because it's very low effort. It's basically monthly meal plans. It's a monthly calendar with challenges with a certain area in your life. So marriage, money, finances, organization, productivity. And then there's a Facebook community aspect of it. There's a premium email newsletter that Brittany sends out. We have giveaways. So they're getting a ton of value for $9 a month, which the whole premise of that is let's get as many people in there as possible and keep them as long as possible, where it's kind of like a Netflix for moms.
Yeah, exactly. I think we use that Netflix analogy with Liz as well. Like it's a low enough price point where you're like, yeah, I'm getting, even if I didn't use it this month, like I'm confident I'll use it again next month. Like it just
totally,
once you're in, hopefully you're in for good. She mentioned there the churn was higher than she'd like.
Same.
That's always the case.
Yeah, we're trying to fix it. Yep.
Anything worked on that front to keep people in longer?
We did some consulting. I think the biggest thing is we need better onboarding where when someone joins and they get the email, like the first two or three emails needs to give them a quick win and they need to get the product in front of their face that they're using, mostly the meal plans, so that they say, wow, this is actually really, really helpful. And for $9 a month, why would I not stay? And then it's just building up the community aspect around it so that the moms can support each other and they can control the chaos together. But yeah, almost all due to fulfillment and onboarding is the churn rate issue we have.
And the community element is through the Facebook group right now?
Yep.
Okay. That's the continuity program here, like recurring revenue. That's the holy grail. That's the dream.
100%.
Trying to provide that value upfront, the meal plans, the monthly challenges. And what was somewhat common in the membership space is, okay, people will join for the content. They'll join for these printables, the meal, like all of this stuff. And then hopefully they'll stick around for the community aspect. Like they make friends, they build connections in this space, but it's maybe easier said than done with people from all around the country who don't even know each other.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. Liz does an excellent job in her community with kind of that community feel. So ours is pretty good, but it's nowhere near hers. So we're definitely trying to work on it.
More with Kellen in just a moment, including how many savvy mamas have joined the membership so far, what it was like spending $10,000 a day on Facebook ads, the single tool tech stack that runs the membership, and how he lost a $60,000 a year income stream overnight, right after this. Are you looking for your next business venture? It's so easy to get started in vending, and the possibilities of what you can sell are pretty much endless. Snacks and drinks, electronics, personal care items, you name it, you can probably vend it. And what's great about getting started in the vending game is this: no degree required, just your own hustle. And our sponsor, Cantaloupe, can help you easily start a vending business and earn some passive income. Cantaloupe connects you with the right suppliers and partners to get started. They equip you with the technology to collect credit card and mobile payments right out of the gate. And they provide free software that helps you manage your business from day one. So join the more than 30,000 entrepreneurs who rely on Cantaloupe to run and grow their vending businesses every single day. To get started, visit cantaloupe.com/sidehustle. That's cantaloupe, like the fruit, cantaloupe.com/sidehustle. And big thanks to Cantaloupe for sponsoring the show. Are you looking for your next business venture? It's so easy to get started in vending, and the possibilities of what you can sell are pretty much endless. Snacks and drinks, electronics, personal care items, you name it, you can probably vend it. And what's great about getting started in the vending game is this: no degree required, just your own hustle. And our sponsor, Cantaloupe, can help you easily start a vending business and earn some passive income. Cantaloupe connects you with the right suppliers and partners to get started. They equip you with the technology to collect credit card and mobile payments right out of the gate. And they provide free software that helps you manage your business from day one. So join the more than 30,000 entrepreneurs who rely on Cantaloupe to run and grow their vending businesses every single day. To get started, visit cantaloupe.com/sidehustle. That's cantaloupe, like the fruit, cantaloupe.com/sidehustle. And big thanks to Cantaloupe for sponsoring the show.
How many members are in there at this point?
So we have right around 2,000 members right now, which is incredible. And it's been such a blessing to take the stress off of owning the Savvy Couple and being so reliant on Google, is having this reoccurring monthly membership that we can rely on. Last year, right around Christmas time, we were spending for almost 2 weeks straight. I think it was about 10 days. We had the ads just absolutely cranking. We turned up the ad spend to $10,000 per day.
Wow.
And we added,
oh my gosh.
So $100,000 in ad spend. We added over 500 members within that 10-day span to our membership. And it was right around that Christmas to New Year kind of week.
Okay. Now I'm trying to bring out the calculator because I have learned my lesson of trying to do like live math on air. But if I'm doing 500 members times $9 a month times 12 months in a year, so I just spent $100,000 on ads to make $54,000 in annual revenue, but hopefully they stick around and...
Right. And that's only part of, yeah.
They're buying the bundle.
They're buying the chaos bundle ahead of time. So there's another $34 for each person. I think for those 10 days that we spent $10,000, we made like $10,000 or $15,000 in profit, not including the membership.
Okay. Yes.
We were spending an absurd amount and it was like scary. Like, oh my gosh, if this, I need to be on this like every single hour of the day.
Yeah. How is this performing in real time?
Exactly. Right. As soon as it started to die off, I'm like, all right, we got to close it down. I think we ended up losing like, I don't know, $2,000 or $3,000 at the tail end of it when it started to die off.
Okay. Is that typical with, is it just a product of the seasonality or like the timing of the offer? Or is just like the algorithm wears out? We reached all the people that we could. Like, what do you think that is with Facebook?
Yeah, all the above. So we've had, that was the biggest wave, 100%. We've never spent that much. We're usually right around spending almost $1,000 a day consistently with Facebook ads to grow the membership and sell the chaos bundle. But yeah, it comes in waves. Sometimes it'll optimize like crazy and you put the ad spend up and then the next day it dies and you're like, dang it, I got to start over again.
When you're saying optimize, like, is that swapping out different ad images, ad copy, that kind of thing?
No, that's just Facebook found like, it found like a new section of the audience and it's expanding and it's just kind of exploding.
I love being able to spend money profitably and just rack up the credit card points and just,
100%.
You just keep it rolling.
There's nothing like it.
It doesn't last forever, it sounds like. Or it's like maybe the steady state is this $1,000 a day. Like, this is what we're comfortable with. This is, you know, growing. This is profitable. But then every now and again, there's like, we found some new moms to go out and target here.
Totally. Yep.
Wow. Super cool. Okay. So we've got the digital product, this chaos to control bundle, which leads people into this membership. What, like in terms of the transition email, like, hey, hopefully you like this. You found some value in it. Come over here. There's more. If you like that, there's more. Like, what's the transition sequence to get people from paying you one time to paying you recurring?
It goes back to provide value first. I can't remember the course we took that gave us the swipe copies that we're still using. I believe it was Creighton Goh's six-figure blogger, but we basically give them the product right away, help them use it in the first email, introduce ourselves, and then it's like straight into value. Like, why are you a hot mess? And like agitating the problem, because a lot of people that come to us, they are moms that say they're hot messes and they're so unorganized and disorganized. So it's like we have three value emails that Brittany's given the best tips and tricks away. And then it's like a surprise of like,
I just want to like pause. Like, there's no shame in that. Like, I feel like that's got to be every house in the country.
Yeah,
like, it's a fantastic 100%. Market to go after.
It's like, ours.
Everybody feels like that. Yeah.
100%. Ours feels chaotic. So yeah, those keywords that we really dove deep into the avatar and who it is and how to talk to them. And then we do like a pause day and we say, hey, something really special is coming up. And then it's a 5-day sequence into launching and showing the value and testimonials of the membership.
And it's an evergreen launch though.
Correct. Yep. It's open all the time.
Okay. What drives the scarcity there? Like limited time discount or what? Talk to me through that.
The people that don't buy the Chaos Bundle, we basically include that within the membership. If they join, that's the bonus, which is a really big bonus. And then there's some other bonus. But yeah, there's a bonus that goes away is the biggest scarcity. And then originally we started saying that the price is going to go up, which I mean, it did. And we tried it and we said we're better off doing $9 a month. So we took that out. But the biggest thing is the bonus.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Something with some time-limited scarcity to get people off the fence for anything evergreen. That makes sense.
Totally. Yeah. And if you can, open close is a great model too. If you can say like, this is your last chance to join, I don't know when I'm going to open up again. There's nothing that beats that scarcity with just FOMO, but you obviously have to be honest with it. So I think bonuses for us, since we're keeping evergreens the most effective way.
Is that a deadline funnel thing that allows you to take those away or deliver them as somebody does order?
The bonuses?
Yeah. Or the 5-day countdown.
If someone does purchase, like, do we take them out of it?
Yeah, just like, what's to stop them from like going in and ordering, just the mechanics of it?
So we use ThriveCart. So anyone that purchases through that link, they'll get tagged with they bought through the Evergreen Funnel. So then that once they get into the membership portal, that product that we promised as the bonus will be in their portal versus other people that didn't purchase through that link.
Got it. And what's the software that's running the membership side?
It's all on ThriveCart. So that's our checkout membership.
Okay. I didn't realize they had that functionality. Okay.
Yeah. It's definitely limited, but for what we do is like delivering printables and there's no like course or anything yet, which we will add. It's free. So we paid $500 to get it for life and it's better than paying $300 for Kajabi or whatever else, Podia. For now, for us, it works really well.
Yeah. If it's simple, like I don't need video hosting. I just need a place where people can log in and grab their digital downloads that they requested. And then every month you're uploading the new stuff to that portal and then just sending out an email that says, hey, this month's meal plan is up or whatever.
Exactly. Yep. And then also in the Facebook group. So we give them multiple touch points to try and continue to use the membership.
Got it. All right. So there's the membership side of things. There's the affiliate partnerships through SEO website content. There's ads. This is Mediavine on the like display ad side.
Yep. For both sides.
Okay. And then digital product. So I guess the printables, like any other digital product sales to speak of, courses, anything else as part of the revenue pie?
No, we've tried probably 5 or 6 courses with the Savvy Couple and we've had decent launches and decent sales, but we've never stuck with it to make it work. We kind of just say, hey, I'd rather optimize an article and make an extra $500 this month by optimizing the article versus like selling courses and launches and stuff that takes up a lot of energy and time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is there a direction you want to go? Like if we could make the membership 50%, 75% as a piece of the pie, like where do you want to go?
So we basically split the businesses so that we could better serve the audiences. Our goal is, and I think we're almost there already, is like if the Savvy Couple went to zero tomorrow, could we survive off the Savvy Mama?
Yeah.
And that just takes diversification on not relying all on Google and not relying all on affiliate marketing. It's this own separate business that's really taken off and done well. But it is stressful still, and it does take up a lot of time and energy. So we're trying to optimize it and outsource more and more.
Where does the time go these days between, I mean, we've talked about a lot of different responsibilities, creating new monthly printables and meal plans, creating new content or overseeing that process, updating the old stuff. Like what's a day or a week in the life these days?
Brittany and I both work together full time. She left 2 years after I quit and we kind of split our time. I work in the morning between like 9 to noon or 8 to noon. So 3 to 4 hours a day. After that, my brain is complete mush. And I don't know how people work 8 hours a day, to be honest. I just become so less productive after 4 hours of deep work. But yeah, we have an incredible team. We have an ops manager that basically runs our team, which is just the content team. And we have really good systems in place there. I go in once a month and look at our top 20 articles and just optimize those. And they do everything else with the audits, the new creation of content, all that stuff. And then we have a VA that helps Brittany create all the printables. And so she's really just email marketing and kind of strategy, giveaways and stuff like that. She maybe works 10 hours a week.
Yeah, I think we're very similar in terms of businesses, in terms of just ways of thinking about a lot of things.
but very different in another important way. Because is it true you quit your job after the site made its first $50?
Yeah. I think I was in a spot, though, that I didn't care about risk. I love risk anyways. I'm pretty risk, not risk adverse, the opposite of that.
Yeah, risk seeking or risk comfortable. I don't know.
Yeah, risk lover. We made $50 and I was at this point where I was depressed and hated every job I ever had and knew that if I stayed there, I would just be miserable the rest of my life. Our marriage was struggling because of it and Brittany was sick and tired of me complaining. So I said, hey, we didn't just jump without having our finances ordered. We still had a lot of student loan debt, but we had at least 6 months of nest egg where we could live off of that and Brittany's salary so that I'm not having to make horrible decisions based on where's the income coming from and trying to make money quick. So that was a huge blessing to have that income saved up. And then I just had confidence in myself. I've had a bunch of businesses. I did drop shipping in college. And so I've made money online, but that $50 was like it's just a signal of like, go all in and you can find freelance work with digital marketing because you've been doing it. And within 2 months, I replaced my income with freelancing and our blog.
Okay. So starting out like, okay, I'm going to provide some service to other people in the space. And that while I continue to grow up the blog side of things, because now I got an extra 40, 50 hours a week to dedicate to this stuff.
Exactly.
So yeah, that makes sense. Huge. But yeah, I'm always like, that makes me super nervous. I want to see a little bit longer track record of revenue. But we've heard from other guests too. Like, look, if you can make $50, you can make 5,000. If you can make 5,000, you can make 50,000. Like, it's just a matter of scale and putting the pieces in place to make that happen. Now, over the course of the last 7, 8 years of running this thing, what has surprised you the most?
The biggest one for me that I think we both went through is we were both doing really well with the Steady app. And it was an awesome partner for us. And it was a great affiliate program. And all of a sudden, the program shut down. And I was spending a lot of time optimizing videos and articles to promote them. And I think at our peak, we were making close to $5,000 per month. And if you extrapolate that out 12 months, that's $60,000. And then all of a sudden they come over and say, hey, program's closed.
Yeah, it's like losing a full-time salary for a lot of people.
For sure. Yeah. I just remember kind of feeling helpless and devastated and like, oh my gosh, I just spent all like the last 3 months optimizing to make this one of our core affiliates. So that was definitely surprising. And it definitely made me realize any core affiliate that you have, you need to have an alternative in the waiting for if they were to shut down the program, change their payout, you can quickly swap it in and not lose that much money. So that was definitely a wake-up call for me.
Did you find a good alternative?
Not really. Not with Steady.
It was kind of a unique app. Yeah.
They were so in line with you and me with making money online and being a good side hustle app. So yeah, we kind of just switched back to kind of some survey companies and then some courses that teach side hustles and whatnot. And then other than that, I think diversifying is huge. I think it is important to go all in and kind of find success in one thing. And then once you do, and you've doubled down on that and you've kind of pushed it as far as you can, I think it's really important to diversify. So whether that's start another blog or grow the YouTube channel or email list, invest passively in other ways with cash from your business, I think that's super important. And not only for the business sake, but also mental health and just not having to stress about your online income coming in because it does fluctuate a lot and you got to have some risk tolerance being an online business owner.
And it's how quickly you get accustomed. We had a guest who was talking about this, how quickly you get accustomed to a certain level. And even if it dips back down, you're like, now I'm depressed because I was used to making whatever, $1,000 a day or something. And now it's only 500. You're like, but I still made 500. Like, I'm still better off than I was 6 months ago. But it's just like this weird human nature there.
Yeah. I think as entrepreneurs, we're always trying to have that growth mindset and trying to beat the last month, beat the last month. We used to do income reports and I'd stress out about them because if I had a month where I made 14,000, then the next month there's only 10. I felt like I was a failure to my audience that I was trying to teach how to blog. So we stopped doing those a long time ago. But yeah, that is interesting that any entrepreneur I've ever talked to has the same mindset of those roller coaster setbacks and kind of questioning things. And I think it's important to always take that step back. And I try every morning to spend some time with God and just be grateful for what he's created and helped us with and super important.
You mentioned this, get while the getting's good, right? Simplify first, diversify second. It's like trying to find that balance of what if the rug gets pulled out while I was still doing the simplify thing before I had a chance to diversify. It's really tough, but I think the business model is set up in such a way that there's a lot of built-in leverage where if I can do this work right, and hopefully I can reach a lot of people with the work that I do once, creating digital products, creating online content, I mean, that's the nature of the affiliate game. It's like commission rates can change at any time. It can cut you from the program. The program can shut down at any point. I was doing really well with Udemy, and still, like, over the lifetime of this post, it's probably still made 40, 50 grand. But at a time, we're paying like 40 or 50% commissions. And now it's like 10%. Well, it's like, okay, I'll just prioritize something else. Or like, not, it's not worthwhile to go and update this as often as it once was. But it's just, there's this constant ebb and flow. And I think you guys have done well of, yeah, we'll take it. We'll optimize for that. But on the side, we're also going to be building our own thing. And we're going to be building it with our own audience, with our own traffic sources, with our own recurring revenue model, and just try and wean the reliance off of Google and ads and affiliates a little bit. I think that makes a lot of sense. Well, what's next for you? What's the rest of this year got in store?
Our goal is to continue to grow the membership. I have a goal written on the whiteboard here to my right of reaching 10,000 members, which is a very lofty goal. And I don't think I wrote that goal when we were spending $10,000 a day and the membership was growing absurdly quick. So
we're like, oh, we'll get there in a couple of weeks. This will be good.
Yeah, right. I wish. So that's the big goal. I think if we can get half that, I'd be super happy. So it's really optimizing the membership, reducing the churn rate and fulfillment and all that stuff. And then, yeah, just going heavy on YouTube. I think that that's still a really good runway before AI takes over. And I think it's a really good, I don't think there's any better combination between a blog and a YouTube channel and kind of commingling them together to continue to build and grow.
That's the 1-2 punch, especially if you can show your face. Hey, look here, this is the authority you're looking for, Google. Exactly. I know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Well, very good. TheSavvyCouple.com. You can find Kellen over there. TheSavvyMama.com as well. See what they're up to. Let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
My number one tip is action over perfection. I think that a lot of people that want to start a side hustle or they've already started one, they get caught up in trying to make sure they plan out every step of the process and plan out the vision and all that stuff. And I think the biggest tip that I've had, and I just got back from a real estate conference with multi-millionaires talking to them. I think the biggest thing that everyone kind of reiterated is you got to take action, and the action is going to lead you in the right direction. And you'll be able to pivot if you're making the wrong decision, but that's going to give you the swings at bat and the experience you need to be successful.
You're going to go buy some real estate after hanging out with Dustin at, how does he pronounce it? Rubicon.
Real Estate Wealth Builder Conference.
Okay.
Yeah. We're definitely busy with the two blogs here and the two brands, but it's definitely something that we want to figure out how to continue to diversify our assets and cash flow into real estate in the next few years, especially as our girls get older and get into school and we have a little more time on our hands.
Yeah, we're playing the digital real estate game, but could definitely use some depreciation write-offs come tax time. So some benefits and just taking some chips off the table. Like, oh, look, I'm going to go put this ones and zeros in the ether in a lot of ways. Like, we could put it into something tangible as a preservation tactic rather than anything else. But I love that. Action over perfection. You heard it here on the Side Hustle Show. A couple of takeaways before we wrap up. How are you going to send those authority signals to Google? Think about that in every piece of content. Like the days of trying to create an anonymous niche site about whatever random topic and trying to stay behind the scenes. Like, that never worked for me. I don't think it's going to work anymore. You got to be kind of front and center, have an opinion, have some, and that authority can come over time. Like, you just have to be willing to put in the time talking about a specific topic. The other thing that Kellen mentioned was really diversifying traffic sources, diversifying income sources, and to the real estate thing, like taking some chips off the table as things work, but balancing that with the simplify first. If you get something work, you got to have one thing working before you can diversify. And then finally, leverage. Like, we're both fans of this business model where you can create something once and it's like one to many. Like, I can create it once and serve thousands and thousands of people and create something once and sell it to thousands and thousands of people, like looking for business models with some leverage built in. And it's one thing that maybe separates an online business like this from a freelancing or consulting business like that. How long is the lever kind of a thing? So you might be thinking, hey, this is super cool. What to listen to next? I've got a couple of recommendations for you. First up, my episode with Shelley Marmer from TravelMexicoSolo.com. Fantastic interview on SEO, blogging, affiliate marketing. At the time we recorded, she was earning around 50 grand a month after just a few years of effort. Like, started a travel blog 2020. I would tell you, well, blogging, that ship has sailed. No, started relatively recently, was doing really well. That's episode 573 in your archives. You can scroll that one down and add it to your list. The other one I had in mind is Andrew Fiebert. Andrew runs Lasso, like the affiliate display plugin software, but also runs Gift Lab. It's a really cool website and cool affiliate business where he just curates gift lists for really specific use cases, really specific personalities. And Andrew, at the time of that recording, said that GiftLab had earned $1.2 million in its first 5 years of existence. And what was interesting was like year one, zero, year two, 7,000, year three, 40,000. And it was like kind of like the snowball effect of building up the authority and like the library of content in that space. And that is episode 537. So 573, Shelley's travel blog, 537 for Andrew's gift idea website, both really creative online business case studies. I think you'll get a ton of value from those. And if neither of those sound interesting, that's okay too. You can go build yourself a custom side hustle show playlist at hustle.show. Thousands of listeners have already done it. All you gotta do is answer a few short multiple choice questions and it'll generate a personalized playlist based on your answers. Hustle.show for that. Kellen, thanks so much for sharing your insight. Thanks to our sponsors for helping make this content free for everyone. You can hit up sidehustlenation.com/deals for all the latest offers from our sponsors in one place. Thanks for supporting the advertisers that support the show. That is it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're finding value in the show, the greatest compliment is to share it with a friend. So fire off a text message. Hey, you got to go check this out. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen. And I'll catch you in the next edition of the Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.